Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
I'm John Steinbacher.
And I'm the intern, Roger Blanco.
Hey, Roger Blanco
the
in
intern,
the house.
Comma, Roger Blanco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good to have you here, Roger.
We're so excited.
Excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fired up. Our first intern. We've made it.
Yeah, like we're official now because we have an intern.
Exactly.
So it's gonna be awesome.
It will be.
No pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Roger. No, but Roger will be with us for the spring 2018 semester, and this is the first podcast recording he's been a part of. But we anticipate that he will bring some interesting ideas to the Bandwagon platform.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. Looking forward to that. And we've got a great episode on tap for you this time around. Our special guest will be Isaiah Martinez, two-time national champion for the University of Illinois wrestling team. He's going for the third national title here in a few weeks. We'll talk to him about his career at Illinois and more coming up in a few minutes. Our controversy this week, we'll be talking a little bit about Shaun White, who just won another gold medal in snowboarding at the Olympics. But there's some other things about Shaun White that have proven to be pretty controversial. We'll dive into that coming up a bit later in the episode. We'll have our usual status update as well, see what's going on social media. But first, news notes here. I guess I'll kick things off here talking about the Chicago Cubs and signing Yu Darvish to a six-year, $126 million contract, really the first big free agent signing of the offseason. I think before that signing, I think the Cubs also had the biggest free agent contract, but it was only for like $38 million for Tyler Chatwood. Yeah, so it's been a kind of a slow offseason. We may dig into that a little bit more because next time around, I think spring training will be in full swing.
Right, they're actually having a spring training for unsigned players, which is pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, it is. I know, Roger, you're a Sox guy. I know they're probably not going to be adding a bunch of free agents this year, but maybe next year.
Yeah, next year I'm excited. We have a lot of money to spend. I'm hoping we get Manny Machado. That's the number one guy, so hopefully that works out. I'm excited.
All right, good deal. And, you know, Lisa, I know you've been glued to the TV watching Olympics.
My husband is so tired of it. He was like, I said, something like skiing got canceled because they have canceled a lot of skiing these last few days because of the wind. And some of the footage they were showing last night was incredible, like blizzard conditions up there. So there's no way people are going to ski when it's like that. But he was like, I could hear him muttering under his breath, movies are better anyway. But he did end up sitting down and watching the snowboarding with me, which we watched last night. But other sports that I've been paying attention to pretty closely have been the curling, of course. And did you know that there is a curling stone emoji? I did not know this until yesterday.
Nice.
There's a curling stone emoji. I'm going to send it to everybody. I've also been following the women's hockey, which has been amazing. And then I saw a completely incredible ending to a men's cross-country race. So it wasn't biathlon. It was just a straight-up cross-country race. I have no idea how far they go. It's like lots of laps. Some, lots of hills and stuff. But basically, how in the Tour de France, sometimes if a cyclist goes down, they bring down a whole bunch of other people with them. Same thing happens in cross-country skiing. If somebody goes down, they bring down other people with them because they ski in a pack when they start, and then they all stop at pit stops along the way. And so a lot of times they're bunched together again. Anyway, this one guy went down, brought down other guys with him. He was at the back of the pack, like 42 seconds behind or something. And then he ended up winning the race. Spoiler alert, he ended up winning the race. I don't know what country he was from. I just was watching it, and he won by like 15 seconds.
Wow.
I'm not even sure exactly what happened there. Some sort of athletic fortitude kicked in. So, yes, I've been watching, and I plan on I don't know about you guys. I do plan on watching more of the curling. I did watch some of that. Thanks to a link that John posted in Slack to us involving the Norwegian curling team's pants.
Mm.
I'm going to be watching the attire of curling much more closely.
Yeah.
I've always been into that, and the Norwegian team has always been pretty, sartorially forward. So I am definitely going to watch the curling, but I have to confess I'm pretty in the tank for the hockey team, the women's hockey team in particular. They were fantastic, and six of their players played hockey for the University of Minnesota, so go Gophers.
Very nice. Yeah, I think we've all kind of got our own sports we're going to be following here. We'll have a full update on our next episode. Lisa, curling is yours, correct?
It's probably going to be curling, but it's not going to. I'm very interested in how to see how Michaela Schifrin does in the skiing. I mean, and then anything that's involves skating, I'm pretty much going to watch too. So
cool. I've chosen biathlon, and I quickly realized that I've got a lot of reading to do on the rules of biathlon. There's a lot going on there. I mean, obviously it's a combination of skiing and shooting, but the shooting, if you miss a target, you have a penalty, et cetera, et cetera. I got a little more reading to do before I feel real
That's
comfortable
your assignment
about
for next time.
Knowing what's going on. There have already been a few events I've watched clips of, but I've got a little more to do. John, what do you got going on?
Snowboard cross, which I don't have to do much reading. They race down the hill, and whoever gets across the finish line wins. If you knock someone else over, you're out.
Hey,
there you go.
That's
basically the rules.
Outstanding. Now, Roger, what are you keeping an eye on?
What I found fascinating was the moguls, just going down and just the bumpiness of it, and just feels like it's wear and tear in the knees. I don't know how they do it.
Have they shown them in super slow motion where you can you can see like how hard the impact is like that? Yeah, it's incredible.
And then there's a few wipeouts too, which is pretty scary to watch. But yeah, the whole thing just. That sport really just intrigues me a lot.
Cool.
All right. Good. So we'll have a more complete update on that coming up.
I got too many controversies that I want to bring up.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Just because of more problems. One, Lisa, this involves curling. Apparently there's some guy who curls with like the same shoe he's worn forever, and it really upsets the other curlers.
So his shoe upsets the curlers?
It's disgusting. Everyone's so disgusted by it. So you'll have to look into that.
I'm going to look it up.
The second one was the fact that the snowboard slope-style event, especially the women's event, which involves huge jumps, went on in the high winds despite the fact that all the skiing was canceling. There's a lot of controversy over that. And
was that today?
No, that was the other day. Basically, there were 50. I think instead of three runs, they only got two runs. They didn't have any preliminary runs. And out of the 50 snowboarders, only 10 landed it. It was huge. It's a huge controversy. So just a little note about how the snowboarders feel like they don't get as much respect as the skiers. Now, the U.S. won a gold in the event. I think her name was Jamie Anderson. She is the best of all time. She's a little old. But everyone was upset because they didn't get to go off. This is the same event that the day before, that 17-year-old lad named Red, I don't know what his last name is, but he won for the U.S. So the U.S. has actually won all the snowboarding events so far.
Is Red the one that fell asleep binge-watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and was late to his own Olympic
event? That sounds about right. He's also the one who, like, how are your parents enjoying the event? He said, they're doing great. They were shotgunning beers this morning right away. He's that guy.
Get them amped up.
that kind of sums up snowboarding, I think, right about there, doesn't it?
Perfect.
That's great. Whoa. So we'll have a more full update on our Olympic events coming up here in their next episode. John mentioned many controversies. There's not much controversial right now about Illini basketball. It's just not very good this year.
Neither.
The women have yet to win a Big Ten game, despite the best efforts of Alex Whittinger, who had 30 points and 16 rebounds in her last game against Ohio State. The men only have two Big Ten wins. They've fallen back into last place in the Big Ten since Rutgers won last night.
Cellar dwellers, you guys.
Yeah, and Lisa, you got to see the last carnage against Penn State.
I'm making sad emoji face right now. Every year my brother's family takes whatever Brault's Kellys are around to a basketball game for Christmas. It's always in February, and we take them out to dinner. And so our annual outing to State Farm Center was this past Sunday against Penn State. And we started off playing real well for the most part. It was, but we gave up our lead, whatever lead we had, we steadily gave up toward the end of the first half. And Penn State pulled, I think we were actually losing by one. I think it was 37-36 at half. And they carried, the momentum was with Penn State, and they brought it right back out after halftime. Not sure if Coach Underwood punched out a garbage can or not during halftime. He seemed not bloody when he came back out. So, the things I noticed, who here has been to a game yet this year? Have you been?
John's been to several.
I was at the game.
You were at that game? Yeah. Oh, okay. So what I noticed, because when I'm just watching on television, I feel like I'm never getting a full picture of what is actually happening. I mean, you're seeing half-court basketball, basically. So we're terrible on defense. were awful. We got dunked on like 6 times in the second half. Nobody was getting back. Penn State also were very aggressive on defense, I thought, too, and just sort of rattled our guys, it looked like. And then they went scoreless for 7 minutes in the second half. The first 7 minutes of the second half, which really kills the crowd's mood, can I just say? Kills it.
It goes from, like, silence to murmuring to
groaning. Well, nobody around us was even watching the game. By, you know, by the middle of the second half, everybody was just sort of talking about other stuff.
Well, and I will say I split season tickets with somebody, so I'm always sitting around the same people. And, to the crowds, to their defense, like, all the games I've been to, you get excited for a few minutes, and you're just like, this movie again.
Yes.
I mean, we were... I forget what game it was. Was it against who? I forget. Was it against Iowa or something? We're winning by like...
By 20.
20 yeah. at halftime or close to it. And the woman in front of me was like, they're going to blow this. And they did.
They did.
Oh. Well... Yeah.
They had even had to like force overtime with like a crazy 3-pointer at the end of regulation.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing I would say about Illinois basketball this year is at least, you know, Trent Frazier sort of makes them worth watching. Sort of like, you know, Whittinger with women's basketball. You know, you at least you have a show to watch, whether or not it's not going to be a great show, but it's a fun show.
Well, I think they missed Finke too. He's out with a concussion, or was for that game. So, and he wasn't even on the bench. I don't even know if he was there.
Yeah.
But it took me a little while to realize that he wasn't even there. So they missed him because he's averaging almost 10 points a game. But, you know, I don't know if he would have made them play any better.
Well, I don't know that, you know, he's certainly not an all Big Ten guy or anything like that, but when you've got a team that's very thin in the front court anyway, to lose a starter in that position, it's going to hurt you. I mean, they had to play a freshman in that spot.
Spicy G.
Greg Egaboyden or something like that. I can never say his last name. I've never had to say his last name.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me being at games because I don't go very – I go to maybe one a year, and so I'm always amazed at the changes inside the arena or the scoreboards or how many cheerleaders they have or this. And, like, so there's this huge contrast between, like, this sort of, you know, sad effort happening on the court during the game and then – you get all the cheerleaders and everybody out there, and it's like super pizzazz, jazzed up, big music, movies, you know, like they have these intro videos that are just like everybody's looking mean and tough. And it's just so funny how you have all those bells and whistles, yet what's happening on the court is like just bad basketball.
Well, Roger, you do a little behind-the-scenes stuff for that, right? Do you have any
Yeah, I mostly worked the women's games last semester, and it's just, not saying it's tough to watch, but they just get down in the hole early, and it's just... You can't play from behind, and especially if you have one good star player, it's going to be hard to come back. But they show like a couple exciting plays, and just they have like a little spark, but just never can finish it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's where Illinois basketball is at this year. Maybe next year will be a little
womp,
better.
Womp.
One thing that is better, though, is Illinois wrestling this year. They're having another fine season, led by one Isaiah Martinez, a 2-time national champion, going for his 3rd national championship here in a few weeks. And he'll be our special guest on the bandwagon. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. Well, it's not often we have a 2-time national champion in anything here in our our studios for the bandwagon. Pleased to welcome Fighting Illini senior wrestler Isaiah Martinez to the bandwagon studio. Isaiah, it's great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, you just completed your regular season, undefeated regular season. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. I was looking at, actually, stats popped up on my Twitter feed yesterday, and apparently it was my 3rd regular season going undefeated, so I've... It's kind of funny looking back, but it's kind of nice.
Now, you got off to a bit of a late start in your season this year. Just kind of tell us what was going on there in the early part of the year for you.
Well, for the first half of the season, I was competing internationally. I was on a world team, so I was competing at the World Championships in Bydgoszcz, Poland. So I was training through October, November, and then the World Championships were in November. So I wasn't able to go to early season opens, and I wasn't really even training with the team. I was kind of having to be on my own schedule, but I started competing with the team starting the second half, so the Big Ten dual season. So that was why I, instead of having probably maybe 19 matches this regular season, I only had 11.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, I know you're gearing up for the Big Ten Championships here in a couple weeks and the national championships right after that.
And where is that?
The Big Ten Championships will be in East Lansing, Michigan State.
Yep.
And then the national championships in Cleveland, is that right?
Cleveland this
year. Lovely Cleveland. Ohio.
Cleveland rocks, as they say.
That's right. So I have a couple questions just about how you started wrestling, like when you were a kid, what it was like. Like, how old were you, and how did you get into the sport? And I'm always curious when I talk to athletes about once they show talent in a sport, how are they supported in that sport? Like, I had a daughter who played club soccer, for example. Is there club elite wrestling, or did you just go through high school and that was the only background that you had, or how did you come up to get where you are now?
Okay, so it's a long story, but I started wrestling when I was 4 years old. Right, it's the only sport. It's the only sport I've ever played.
Wow,
right? It's the only thing I've ever been. I started mainly because my older brother was in it when he's about 4 years older than me, so. He was in it, and I played, like t-ball and soccer and basketball, actually. And I never really showed any promise in anything. I mean, I was tiny. I didn't break 100 pounds until I was 14 years old. So wrestling was something that I excelled in at a very young age. And I think my parents realized that, and they were like, this is going to be his thing, I guess. So my dad really, he made my life much more structured and kind of pushed me along. And when I didn't want to do things, he was there to, kind of just push me from behind and say, just keep working and stick with it. And maybe someday, something great could happen. So really, I started when I was four, and my parents kind of just pushed me along until I had, a lot of success in high school. I was a pretty big recruit coming out. And the rest is history.
But like between four and high school, how did you wrestle? Is it like a club, or how did they do that?
So there's various ways of going about doing this in different parts of the country. So where I was from, we have like a feeder program, which is a feeder system through the high school, elementary school, and then younger ages. So basically you go to school and they have a wrestling team, and they have a coach, and you practice with the school, and you go up through the feeder program, and then eventually end up at the high school.
Okay. And where did you grow up?
I grew up initially in Corcoran, California, a town of about 11,000 people, real small in Central California. And then in seventh grade, I moved to a place called Lemoore, California, about 25 miles away. They had a better high school program, so my parents moved there for my wrestling career. And there's another small town, about 18,000 people.
Okay. So, but what you're saying is how they do it in California is probably different than how it's done in Illinois
Yes.
or other places.
Okay. Yes.
So
in places like Illinois or, Ohio, Pennsylvania, like other good wrestling states, they have a club system, right? So you have these regional clubs where kids travel from 2 hours away, and they're all condensed in one area, and kids travel that far because they have partners. So it in a sport like wrestling, it's much more individualized. So if I want to get better, I have to go travel and find guys that could push me, essentially.
Cool.
Now that you're a senior and you've obviously been here for 4 years, maybe you can look back and talk about sort of the decision to come to Illinois and the recruiting process. Illinois, for those unfamiliar, since we're more of a general sports podcast, pretty good wrestling program, but there are certainly maybe better ones. Like, what did you say, Brian?
Penn State right now, yeah.
And I know traditionally in Iowa and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel? I mean, right now you're definitely the best wrestler that Illinois has ever had. So, probably coming out a good decision. But how do you feel about how the recruiting process went looking back and your choice of Illinois?
The recruiting process was fun. The recruiting process is fun. I mean, when most programs in the country want you, it's a lot of attention for a kid that's 17 years old, 16 years old, and it's cool. I mean, when I was getting recruited, basically by some pretty good schools, and it really came down to Illinois and Oklahoma State, right? And so I remember one time, the head coach from Oklahoma State, he's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, five-time world champion, the greatest American wrestler who's ever lived, right, John Smith. He was in my living room, and I couldn't describe the look on my dad's face when he was there. He was sitting there in our living room, right? But yeah, the recruiting process was good. The reason why I came to Illinois is the coaches. I made an immediate connection with the coaches, right? And they were saying the right things to me, right? They were telling me, you know, it doesn't matter what weight you go. We believe you're going to be a national champion. We want you to be the face of our program. We want you to be the banner boy, right? So at the time when you're 17, that's awesome to hear a national a previous national champ head coach of a Big Ten university tell you something like that. So maybe they just said the right things, and I had a good connection with them, and I still have, I mean, with all my coaches, I don't look back and ever regret any decision I've ever made to come to the University of Illinois.
Great.
Outstanding. You're a pretty active guy on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I know you have some fun with it from time to time. Noticed a little trash talk back and forth between you and the Northwestern coach when they were down here for their dual meet. For really people who didn't see how that all played out, if you could just kind of tell us what happened there.
Essentially, it went down like this, right? So our Huff Hall is old, right? It's an old facility. Well, the head coach essentially took pictures and then posted on Twitter and said some not so flattering things about our program, right? And this university and that's you can insult me all you want, but like insult the things that are close to me and I'm gonna have a problem with that, right? So, I'm never one to go out of my way just to talk, but if it's defensive, I'll do it. But I just said a few words back, and yeah, it was just the whole. It wasn't that big of a deal. It was just kind of more of a warning type thing.
Well, I did note that you guys were able to take care of the Wildcats that day too.
Yeah, we ended up winning, so that helps.
So. Twitter as platform for you. You seem to be quite active there just in general, not just, you know, going back and forth with a coach. Among other things, you've also mentioned wanting to write up a report about how sports writers use particular adjectives to describe athletes of color as opposed to white athletes. And have you done that?
You know, I wanted to. So I'm in my senior capstone class right now for sociology, and I was thinking about taking on that project. But I do want to take something, make a some literature on that, but right now I'm working on my senior capstone project, and my last semester here, and
you got some stuff going on. Basically.
Yeah, I got some things going, but it's funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, I mean being growing up Hispanic and going moving to the Midwest and being in an essentially a white dominated sport, there are just some things that I notice about our sport, some things that are problematic, I think it's good to put those on the forefront of my sport, right? Because those are things that we're a really old school sport, essentially, like blue collar kind of sport. So, you know, the more progress I could push, I think the better I'll help our sport out.
Another thing that you said on Twitter, I think somebody posted, it might have been like U.S. Wrestling or somebody posted, why did you get into wrestling? So not how, but you said I think this I pulled from that. It allowed me to take the path of the uncommon man.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
It's just, you know, I have all these kind of sayings, right? I read a lot about history and great men in the past, right? So like I read a lot, and essentially for me the path of the uncommon man is taking a path that's not easy, right? It's easy to do certain things and to take, I mean, it's hard being an athlete and trying to succeed and do well in school. So for me, the path of the uncommon man is never to really feel bad for myself and try just to, at the end of the day, when I meet my maker, is to get the most out of myself and never say that I left something out there.
Well, you make me feel lazy. So you've won two national championships, obviously. Last year, you came up a little short. We're coming up on the Big Ten championship. And then, of course, I'm sure you're not looking too far ahead, but obviously your goal is to win the national championship again. What's your mindset going into that, knowing that for an athlete like you, not to, you know, but I know you feel this way yourself, is anything less than winning the national championship your senior year is going to be a disappointment. How do you approach the next couple weeks and month knowing that it's sort of make or break for you this year?
Yeah. For me, the goal again is never any different, right? It's never to win your third national championship. It's to win the national championship that year, right? So I try to frame it in a way that keeps me focused. Last year was unfortunate, right? I made a run all the way to national finals again. I looked okay at the national championship, but didn't have my best tournament. Ended up coming up short, and that something like that really stays with you for a long time. Right, so basically, all through my training, all through summer, all through fall, you know, you're thinking about getting back to that moment. And for me, you know, you can never rewind your actions, right? When you do something, you can never go back and not do it. So I don't regret, you know, my actions leading up to that national finals. I just want to do it better the next time. So the Big Ten at my weight has most of the best guys in the country. So, I mean, four of the top five guys in the country are from the Big Ten. So the Big Ten's always been tough. So it's like a mini national championship, and it's a practice leading up to the national championship. So I'll really see, you know, where my work is at the Big Tens, and then I'll make the adjustments for the national championships and try to widen that gap.
And just a quick question, knowing that you potentially will face the same wrestler that you do in the tournament, in the Big Ten tournament, as you would in the championship, do you hold something back? Do you save something for the national championship? Or is it always, like you said, I'm going to do my best and then figure out how to adjust afterwards?
Yeah, no, you can't pull your punches, right? Because it's every match is important. That's kind of something that's a philosophy of mine, right? You never try and take an off day, right? Right, you take accountability for what you have to do. So, my goal is to go out there and essentially put on my best performance every single time.
Yeah, and I guess going into the Big Tens, how do you feel you're wrestling right now? You went undefeated, lots of technical falls in your 11-0 record here so far. How much work do you think you have to do before you get to March?
That's kind of funny that you actually say that. I don't know. How much work do I have to do? I'm kind of strange. I don't ever feel very good about where I am, right? I don't ever feel very happy with how I look or my performance. And I don't know, maybe it's just a conditioning thing, but when I watch myself on film, I'm like, man, I wish I could do this better. I wish I could do this better. I wish I could do this better. And I'm still winning these matches by 10, 8, 15 points, right? So, for me, there's always so much to do. There's so many areas where I could be better. And I mean, I wish I had an unlimited youth and an unlimited amount of time to get there, but there's only a finite amount of time, so I'm gonna make the most of what I have.
So, following that, is it too early to talk about what comes after college?
I mean, no. I mean, these next 5 weeks are very, very important. That's where my focus is. But there is a long-term plan, right?
We have Olympic fever right now. I mean, it's the Winter Olympics, I realize, but I figured we have to ask about that.
Oh, my God. I was watching Sean White last night, and when he started tearing up in front of his mom, I thought I was so inspired. The Olympics, they just embody the competitive spirit and the connectedness of every, you know, of nation states. So it's... The Olympics are amazing. So, yeah, I mean, when I was a kid and was 4 years old, I was watching, 6 years old, I was watching the Olympics and seeing wrestlers win gold medals. So that was always the original goal for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my mind goes after the college season.
All right. Cool.
And I just have even more long term. I mean, like you said, you're very narrowly focused on the next 5 weeks, and then after that, maybe, you know, sort of international competition. But looking more long term, knowing that what you said earlier about minorities being underrepresented in wrestling, how important is it for you long term to try and, you know, stay with the sport and maybe bring up a new generation of people who maybe don't fit the, you know, sort of white Midwestern stereotype?
I would like to be a coach someday. You know, I would like to be a college coach, right? My goal, I mean, that's essentially the goal of a lot of, you know, elite level wrestlers is once you're done winning your individual, you challenge yourself in a different way to try to create a team or try to win national championships as a coach. So that's probably a decade away for me, but I would love to be a coach and recruit kids. You know, I'm from the Central Valley in California, you know, predominantly Hispanic population, and there are some phenomenal athletes there that never actually get a chance to develop and essentially shine. So, yeah, I would like to be a coach someday and recruit, I mean, not just from where I'm from, but from anywhere in the country where I could see there's talent.
Isaiah Martinez, two-time national champion for University of Illinois wrestling squad, going for a third national championship next month in Cleveland, Ohio. The Big Ten Championship's coming up in just over 2 weeks.
Ken, so our intern, Roger, had a question about, I'm just going to ask it for Roger because he doesn't have a microphone because we're in a studio that only was five people, four mics. And we were kicking around some questions earlier, and one of the quick questions was, what's your fastest match, your quickest match?
How fast have I won before?
Yeah, I guess that's...
Not very fast. So pinning is a part of the sport where you can end a match fast. And I am... My coach actually said this the other day at practice. He's like, you need to work on getting falls or pins, right? And I was like, I'm just not very good at him. He's like, I know that. You couldn't pin the tail on a donkey. So I don't know. My fastest match might be like 2 minutes. So that's not very fast. Because guys get a pin in under a minute, right? So it's just, I've never been good at that.
Okay, cool.
All right, fair enough. Well, we'll see if maybe you get a pin or two on the way.
We'll be rooting for you.
On the way to the Big Tens or Nationals as well. Isaiah Martinez from the University of Illinois wrestling team, thanks so much for joining us today on The Bandwagon.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Isaiah.
Thanks again to Isaiah Martinez for stopping by on this episode of The Bandwagon.
He's a nice young man.
He is indeed, though, Grandma.
I'm going to go a little grandma on everybody. He's a very nice young man.
He is indeed. We appreciate him stopping by on this episode. And controversy this week, Isaiah mentioned Shaun White, who did win his third gold medal in snowboarding last night. But he's also the subject of our controversy this week. I'm looking at a column from Christine Brennan, USA Today, writing about Shaun, and I'll just read a little bit from it. Shaun White is an American cultural institution, winning the third Olympic gold medal of his pioneering career Wednesday at the 2018 Winter Olympics. But while we glorify him as an All-American athlete, consider this. In August 2016... Lena Zuede, the drummer in his band Bad Things, filed an amended complaint to a civil suit in San Diego alleging White had sexually harassed her, sending, quote, sexually explicit and graphic images to her, text messages White later admitted to sending. And this has all happened over the last couple of years. And I think, John, you were the one who first kind of pointed it out to us on our Bandwagon Slack channel that we have. And I think Slate has been a publication that's been covering this pretty closely.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have. I know Julie DeCaro mentions it frequently. I think it happened a little bit before, you know, what we'll call the Me Too movement. So I don't think it's, you know, if it had happened in the last 3 or 4 months, I think it would be a much bigger deal. And, you know, unfortunately, things that seem to have happened before that maybe, you know, get a pass just because of the way the press works or whatever. And, you know, in this article and a lot of other articles, they talk a lot about how it's not in NBC's interest to talk about this story because they've got a lot riding on Shaun White and his redemptive arc because he won the first two golds and then last Olympics crashed out. And, you know, they have this huge narrative about him and how he's going to win the gold, which he did this time. But to bring up that other stuff, you know, that's just not how they do the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a couple comments there.
Oh, yeah.
So I would also say, so even though it, like other people have reported on it, it hasn't been reported on leading up to the Olympics as part of Me Too. Me Too has involved allegations from decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sports is somehow weirdly exempt from this, and I think Julie DeCaro also talks about that, like how somehow sports, there's still people getting a pass, no pun intended, in the sports world. Stuff just doesn't get brought up the same way, or athletes are treated differently. So I think I think it's just been under the radar. I think it's always been there. But when John posted that last night, that was the first I had heard about it. So shame. Whoops. Sorry. Beep, beep. Shame on me. But I also think NPR didn't report on it. They didn't include it in any of their coverage leading up to the Olympics or even talking about him winning his medal. So it just hasn't been part of the narrative at all. Whereas I think in Hollywood, you know, the past is being brought up constantly and people are altering their opinions about complete works based on that and or at least factoring that in. And I have always admired Shaun White, and he is totally not what I thought he was after reading that. I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, there's some pretty disturbing stuff in there. We'll send out the link to some of the stuff that apparently White has admitted to sending. It's just pretty disgusting stuff.
So then during the press conference, after he won his medal, so there's people in there wanting to ask questions. There were two female journalists in the audience with their hands up the whole time. He never called on them. I don't know if he was choosing who got called on or if one of his people was doing that. But when a reporter finally was able to ask a question about it, he referred to the allegations and his own admissions as gossip.
Mm-hmm.
And that he didn't want to talk about gossip, and he called on somebody else. And the next reporter was like, well, actually, I was going to ask you the same thing. So, you know, they were trying to get him to talk about it. And then as we were talking about off mic earlier, it's obvious somebody said to him, you need to walk it back a little bit. So on the Today Show this morning, he apologized and said he was a different person now than he was when he was younger, meaning 2 years ago, I guess, or yesterday. I don't know. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, yeah. I think the timeline looks like the complaint was filed in August 2016, so it's less than 2 years ago. Now, as to actually exactly when all that stuff was sent, I'm not sure.
I think the person in the complaint said that he got worse after not winning at Sochi.
Okay, so yeah, that's 4 years
got
ago.
Got worse, yeah. So.
Yeah, all a different person than he was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and then you guys were talking about redemptive arc, but I also think he was born with like a heart condition and stuff, and was always like he had several surgeries when he was a little kid, and so there like early on the narrative about Shaun was like he overcame this kind of like health adversity, and his parents have always been big supporters, and I think to me what's controversial here, I mean his behavior is like totally not cool, but that's not, I mean it's. I guess it's controversial. What's controversial to me is the lack of coverage leading up to the Olympics. And as John was saying, like NBC sort of treating him as their golden boy. Every like short mini documentary between skate runs was about him. Mm-hmm. It was like four separate segments or something, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. And when I was watching it, like the Japanese guy's run, which was the second one. So if you have the Shaun White wins the gold on the third one, but that looked at, of course, I can't judge. But to me, like, it was way more impressive than Shaun White's third run. And I said this, I think it's because he's not as tall. So, you know, when he twists and stuff, it just looks, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one thing I would point out to this Olympics I've noticed so far. And, of course, we're very early on. But the last Summer Olympics, I felt like NBC did a much better job of taking it out of, like, USA, 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 and covering like stories from around the world and different athletes who maybe weren't US but had some of these interesting stories. And so far, it seems very US focused. Now, I think some of that will change. I know that we've already had a lot of coverage over the Russian figure skaters who are probably going to dominate, and one of them is I posted it as like a dancer and stuff like that. So I expect that there'll be more of that. But so far it's been very USA heavy, which, you know, I get, and maybe they have to walk it back because it didn't go so well last year. You know, they're playing to an audience. But I really appreciated the last time getting to know like athletes as individuals rather than, you know, necessarily. And you're there for the country, but we all have stories, and that's part of the joy of the Olympics.
But do you think that could just be a function or a result of our current political situation where, like, maybe that's what NBC is showing us because that's what they think people want to see?
I don't know.
But I will say, at least in snowboarding and many of the other winter snow sports, too, you do have U.S. athletes who are dominant. And as if we're talking about snowboarding, she's so far no controversy about Chloe Kim. She's only 17. She couldn't even compete in the last Olympics because she was 13 years old or something. Mm-hmm. But she's boarded, I guess. Is that what we're calling it? And she was like, you're watching all these other women do these really super cool things in the half pipe. And then she gets up there and just blows everybody out of the water. She's an incredible athlete. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with snowboarding. I think there's something wrong with Shaun White. And as I think I mentioned you guys earlier, I would say anything that befalls his legacy at this point is his own fault. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. He can't blame it on anybody. Except himself.
Right. I'd rather focus, and I'd rather pay attention to, like Chloe Kim, who, what a great story that is. Not only her parents are from Korea. So,
yeah, that's right.
I mean, that, you know, you couldn't write that any better. So let's talk about
it. Well, and she just seemed to really be enjoying herself and the other women who were snowboarding. I know they all do the same circuits together, so they know each other pretty well. She's like tweeting between runs, like super chill. Like that is to me sort of. That's what I want to follow.
Right, and I think that's one of the things we were talking about that's really cool about a sport like snowboarding is everyone seems to get along. It's sort of like this attitude of like, woo. And that's also one thing about Shaun White is that he doesn't participate in that stuff. He's always been a big star sort
kind of
onto himself. Yeah. I noticed they kept saying like heavy. Like their commentary, they say heavy all the time. And I'm like, what is this, Back to the Future?
Is there a problem with Earth's gravitational pull?
There was a bad crash, and they're like, oh, man, that was heavy. And then the competition was really exciting because the Japanese snowboarder had a great run, and then Shaun White had it, and they're like, man, this was such a heavy event. And I was like,
must be the
you got to tell me what heavy means.
The
You're
new
using
lingo.
It in too many different ways.
The kids on the slopes.
Yeah, Roger, you got to get on that. Tell us what
it means. Please. That's not a bad idea, though.
Just to wrap this just up, I'll read the last couple of lines of Christine Brennan's column because I think she wrote this pretty well. These allegations against White are awful. Why they've stayed in the background until now, we'll never know. But they're getting our attention now, and it's about time. If we've learned anything about the Me Too movement, it's that we should listen to every allegation and go to great lengths to find out what happened, even with an Olympic hero such as Shaun White. So we'll share that out for you, and that's our controversy for this week. It is status update time. We'll talk about things that have caught our eye on social media here in the last, few days, week or so. John Steinbacher, what do you got?
Well, this is related to what we were just talking about, but in a much different way. And, you know, I hate to slag the mothership, which is NPR. But yesterday, I think Lisa and I were both watching the event live. And right after this, there's three runs, and right after the second run, after Japanese guy, and I can't find his name right now, but he scored like a 95 and was in first place. And then there was run to go, but NPR posted a story, and the headline was, Shaun White picked up a silver medal in the men's half pipe in South Korea, adding to his two golds from previous Olympics. And this was posted. And the reaction on Twitter was just insane because everyone was like, it's still going on live. And most people thought they had spoiled it. Most people thought that somehow there was a delay and that the third run had already happened. So people were super, super mad. And I was sitting there and I'm like, I know it's live because it says live on NBC and you're not legally allowed to say that unless you're actually live. I know that from our fun drives. And I was waiting for NPR to correct this tweet, and it was out there for, I screenshotted it, and it had been out there for 16 minutes, but it was way longer than that, and people were, like, adding NPR, like, what are you doing?
Freaking
so
out.
So I'm just like, don't you have a social, you would think NPR would have a social media editor or something who would have picked that up and been like, well, maybe we should at least take this down temporarily, because everyone's complaining about it, but eventually the tweet was corrected, and I I'm not a journalist, so I have. I feel kind of bad for Bill Chappell, because I know he's got to cover a lot of things. And he said he posted the story because it came up as final. But when what he saw was final was just the final of the second runs, not final.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's got a this is one thing I appreciate about NPR as opposed to maybe some of the other outlets is he's got quite a apology. You would have thought like he shot someone's dog or something. I apologize to the people of Korea, all the NPR fans out there, the athletes. It's like, you know, I feel
NPR.
Bad for him. But anyway, that's my social media.
Lisa, what do you have?
So it's Valentine's Day as we're recording this. Mm-hmm. So last night, as I was after the snowboarding kerfuffle, I noticed that somebody... I noticed that there's a hashtag that is Virtue Moyer, which is the last names of the Canadian pairs skating team, ice dancing team. That's just heating up the ice, as they like to say, the commentators like to say. And the reason why I picked them is because this tweet that I saw was basically a collection of GIFs or GIFs or however you want to say it, that this person had collected mocking Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer for saying that their relationship is platonic. And I have to say, GIFs, because everything is so highly GIFable, every moment, every glance, every touch, every lingering whatever of the performance, and then they also had some GIFs from like practice and interviews and things like that, can be hashed over again and again and again, or in this case, the GIF thread has been retweeted 713 times with 2,043 likes. And the thing is like they really do sell a relationship of some kind on the ice that goes far beyond anything else that you're seeing on the ice. Now, to be fair, one of the pairs that I saw is a brother-sister team, and you're not going to see that anyway from them, no matter what. But it does put teams at a disadvantage, like a brother-sister team at a disadvantage, because they can't show the same kind of passion on the ice, shall I say. And I'm going, and if you look at this thread, I'm just going to say that there are several references to a particular lift that this team does. It's quite passionate indeed, I would say. But anyway, it did remind me a little bit, too. I'm old enough to remember when ice dancing, the first year that it was an Olympic sport was in 1984, and there was a British pairs team, ice dancing team, Torval and Dean, who danced to Ravel's Bolero. I found it this morning. We'll definitely link to it. I'm watching this performance, and I'm like, this is what had everybody going, oh, my God, are they together or aren't they? Back in 1984, when you compare it with the skate that just happened the other night and that we'll see again here in the next few days, it's like, seriously, how did anybody gather that they were at all involved? But it is very compelling, so I just want to wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day.
I want to say that my my family loves the sibling ice dancers.
The Shib Sibs. They're great.
Yeah, I actually haven't watched them, but they must have danced during the game or something because everyone else in my family loves them.
Very good.
Apparently because they're more family friendly.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, by the way, I will say that Virtue and Moyer had to tone down their performance for the Olympics. And what I saw, I was just like, dang. And what I'll post a link to is actually the program they skated right before the Olympics at the Canadian Nationals.
Okay, the one that got everybody
rated
talking.
PG-13 for sure.
Gotcha. All right. Roger, do you have anything this week? Want to make sure I ask you.
Yeah. During the opening ceremonies, there was actually a record setting of 1,218 drones used.
Drones?
Yeah.
How many?
1,218 drones that were used.
Jeez.
For that opening ceremony. It's for Peace in Motion. Just talking about, like, they released doves, or, like, they had, like, people dancing as doves. And that's been a very common theme of the Olympics, the releasing of doves. And then I kind of feel like this is intertwined with, like, the North and South Korea talks that have been going on with, like, unification. So I found that very interesting, and just how big the opening ceremonies have grown since it started. So
was someone tweeting about that?
Oh, yeah, I saw, like a picture of it and just, uh-huh, like, all the drones just up there, and it was incredible to see all that.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, if you haven't seen it, it's drones, like, flapping their, it looks like a dove, and it's just all drones, and apparently,
oh, that's weird.
Just to follow up, apparently they did it in December. They recorded this in December because of the winds.
Oh.
Who
knew it was so windy there?
Yeah.
Man.
So one thing about drones and seeing things from drones, because they're not necessarily drones, but they're definitely overhead cameras and just about everything. I would watch every event from above if I could. Mm. I would. It just looks so much cooler to me to watch curling from above or skating. I think the spins look totally different. I think in some ways it kind of gives you the angle that, I don't know. Just
I'd hate
really
for
cool.
everyone to see my bald spot.
You mean your whole head?
Oh.
This is radio, Brian.
Shoot, man. Time to get out of here.
All right. I'll go last here, get this out. Of course, we mentioned Cubs sign Yu Darvish. One thing that may have had a small factor in Darvish signing with the Cubs is the Cubs did sign a veteran backup catcher named Chris Jimenez previously before that. And Darvish had been on record saying they liked working with Jimenez when they were both with Texas. Yesterday, Darvish was asked about that at his news conference in Arizona, and Darvish, showing his sense of humor, responding, quote, "I like Contreras better," meaning Wilson Contreras, the Cubs starting catcher, had a pretty good poker face while he said it, too, just to give his buddy the business. Jimenez was asked about that a little later in the day, and his response was simply, "Well, I like Lester better," as in John Lester. So, you know, two friends giving each other the business.
Neener.
It was fun. So anyway, I think that will just about wrap things up. It is time for credits, and we've always had Lisa read the credits, but she is giving up those duties to our intern, Roger Blanco.
Oh, we want to thank you for joining us on Bandwagon. Thank you very much. Bandwagon's a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa...
Braltz. Brian's with salt.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's cool.
And John Steinbecker. And the intern, myself, Roger Blanco. Extra large thanks to this episode's special guest, Isaiah Martinez. Regular thanks goes to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where you can stream us again and again and click all the links and stuff. Better yet, subscribe to Bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. Ratings equals discovery and search because algorithms. No iTunes, no problem. You can also find us in Stitcher and NPR One, and we're always working on being available in other places. Follow us on Twitter at BNDWGNPDCST, all consonants, no vowels, to get our tweets. Please add us. We love it when you do. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.